Hello and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Safer Podcast Network. A lot going on today on the Who's On Podcast. I'm going to be joined by UVA baseball star shortstop Eric Becker later. Talk a little bit about fall ball under Chris Pollard. They've got one of their last, scrimmages against another opponent coming up on the weekend against Navy. But it's also the return of football, like a nice little bye week. Not really a rest for us in the media, but a bye week nonetheless. And we got Greg Medea from the Daily Progress coming back on and hand out some midseason grades. You know, we're at the halfway point, six games through the season, and preview this weekend's Washington State game. Greg, it's been a while that we've had you on the podcast. Obviously, we see each other every week.
Yeah, Preston, good to be with you. I was just about to pull up my midseason grades. I was going to pull them up, so I had them ready to roll for you.
Yeah.
I can't believe the football season is flying, right? I mean, already into the second half of the year for Virginia. They're playing well. A lot of encouraging things going on the football field for the Hoos. To me, I just, if you're a Virginia fan, you've got to be really encouraged about the first half of the season. I know a lot of people were dejected right after the NC State loss. They thought, here you go again for Virginia. Some close losses. They look good at times, but another tough loss. Since then, they've been excellent and rattled off, four straight wins going into the bye. They've had the bye to get healthy a little bit. So I think all things considered, if you're a Virginia fan, you've got to be elated. They're in the thick of the ACC title race. There's a shot they could make the playoff if they keep playing well. A lot of things going right for Virginia as they get ready for the second half of the season.
No, I think it's as good a start as you could have hoped for. I mean, sure, like looking back NC State, there's some plays there and there that you wish they could have made, but I don't think anyone had them at 5-1 going into this bye week, because you look at the games that, home against Florida State and at Louisville, like those are going to be tough games too, on top of NC State, who's, they've been up and down this year. It's a Dave Dorn team that, I know there's some people down in Raleigh that aren't too thrilled with right now, but and looking at this bye week, kind of how they have it, put this year. I don't know if like how much feedback they get into these bye weeks, but last year you had like at each like third of the season. So after four games, they had one. After another four games, they had one. And I thought that was really well done. I think this is even better this year. After six games, you get that first bye, and then you get the last one right before Virginia Tech. I don't think they could have asked for just a more well-timed bye weeks.
Well, especially like you look at the ACC schedule too, and Virginia got a favorable draw, like compared to Miami, who's the favorite in the league and number two in the country right now. Miami just had its second bye week. Virginia had its first bye week the same week Miami had its second. And now Miami's got to play seven straight weeks. And if they get to the ACC title game, it'll be eight straight weeks for the Hurricanes of football. That's a little bit of an advantage for Virginia as you start to look and compare and contrast some of these schedules. I keep my master ACC schedule right next to me on the desk. I think, that the bye week situation is good for UVA. They'll go 5 weeks, then they'll have a break before the Hokies. And then, if they're still playing well, they'll be rested for whatever is ahead, whether that's an ACC championship berth or a bowl game or a postseason run. Who knows at this point as UVA gets set for the second half of the campaign.
You mentioned the bye weeks for Miami. I don't think, things aren't going well down in Chapel Hill either, but, to have back, bye weeks with one game in between for them too. Like, I don't know how you plan that. Like you get, we used to only have one bye week. Now you got two. And there needs to be a lot more strategy with that. And I know sometimes you don't have total control of that, but to have your bye weeks that close together for a couple schools is just, I feel like a crime against your team.
Yeah, especially like, not like the ACC didn't know Miami was going to be good, right?
Yeah.
I know you don't want to do any favors for anybody if you're the league. If you don't have to, but you probably want to help out one of your premier brands, especially after the year they had last season and looked like Mario Cristobal was building something. But that'll be interesting to see how Miami handles that, especially like late in the year. I think they go to Virginia Tech and they go to Pitt too, last few weeks of the season. And if they get to Charlotte, it'll be three straight weeks on the road after, and that would be their eighth straight week of football. If you because they had their second bye week already. So how the bye weeks fall is very interesting. And Tony Elliott was talking about that on Tuesday too, Preston, right? You were in there, and he was saying he approaches bye week similarly, but the workload on the players kind of depends on where they're at in the season. And he said because Virginia had played six, he really, limited some of the contact last week in practice. Still, same practice structure, same practice schedule, but stay off your feet. The guys who need the rest, get the rest. And I think it's fascinating, and it does play a role in how these games, how these outcomes are decided.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Virginia entered the bye week with an injury list that the ACC graphic makers were having a really tough time with these new ACC injury reports, but did get some good news with that. We t mentioned Tony Elliott spoke on Tuesday to the media, first time since the bye week. So a couple injury updates. Brady Wilson, obviously a big one at center. He's working his way back into practice after that calf strain. So we'll see, if he's trending the right way. David Wallaba has not played this year yet. The transfer tackle from Syracuse working way back into practice. Noah Vaughn, the running back, he's close to practicing again. Daniel Sparks is punting again. I know he's been off the injury report for a couple weeks, but was just doing holding duty. So, but Eli Slybeck, I mean, filled in admirably in his stead there. ACC Special Teams Player of the Week. Mikhail Boley back in practice. That mysterious kind of injury that we never really heard about, but he's back, so no need to worry there. The tougher ones, Dakota Twitty, obviously everyone saw what happened with him in the Louisville game. He had surgery, and Elliott kind of left it open-ended, but out for an extended amount of time is how he put it. And then Grady Brosterhouse had been off the injury list, but now it seems like he suffered a setback and he's likely out long term for those that are fans of the Grady Bunch. The other big news, obviously, right tackle Wallace Unamba dismissed from the program. Virginia, as these things tend to go, did not have any further comment on that and will not be commenting on that. But all in all, some good injury updates in there, a couple not great, but overall, I mean, it seems like they're sitting in a pretty good spot coming out of the bye week.
Yeah, you'd be a little more discouraged about the Unamba situation if Jack Whitmer hadn't stepped in so well, right? He's taken over that right tackle position, and played very well in after Unamba got hurt. So I think there's full confidence in Whitmer at right tackle, and it probably benefits UVA to get Wallaba back kind of at the same time they're losing Unamba. Wallaba, you haven't seen yet, but he did start games at both Syracuse and Kentucky. So he is a proven veteran. And once you get him healthy and acclimated, maybe can be a depth piece for you there. I think obviously the bigger news is Boley is fine. That's encouraging because he's their best NFL draft prospect on the O-line. And then Brady Wilson at center, that'll only deepen UVA. And talking to Drake Metcalf too about it, he said, that's a really, really good situation because now UVA knows that if they need to turn to Kevin Wigginton off the bench, or if they need to turn to Ethan Sipe off the bench, those guys have already gone out there and shown they can do it while Wilson was out. Metcalf, of course, slid to center to replace Wilson there, but Wigginton got the start and Sipe was used a little bit off the bench. So I think they're probably in a good spot, O-line wise, better spot than they've been in the last few weeks, even with Unamba being dismissed from the team. I think with what they've done up front, the way they've handled things, I think they've only given up five sacks in six games. The rushing offense is the 18th best rushing offense in the country. They're doing a lot of right up front. And of course, it starts with the veterans like Metcalf and Boley and Josie and Wilson when he's been healthy, because he's an excellent center. And I think getting Wilson back, especially as you get toward this stretch run, and if you're going to make a run to the ACC championship game, Preston, you're going to have more available offensive linemen who have played serious football. They had to turn to Ben York in the Louisville game, redshirt freshman. You might not want to be doing that if he did well.
He
But you
did. He
might
did.
you'd rather probably turn to someone with some experience if you're forced to later in the season as the games start to matter more and more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Drake Metcalf put it best with his quote there. It's like war. If you don't have a lot of soldiers on your side of the war, you're probably not going to win. I loved his metaphor. I mean, Drake Metcalf, MVP for sure, some good quotes throughout the season right now.
My goodness, yeah. He has a great way of putting things, and very, very articulate, funny too. So he's a good one to talk to, during the week or after games.
The bully injury was so odd because, it happened right before the 2-minute timeout in that Louisville game in the first half. And John Rodgers had just made that big play to, move the ball down the field. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, bully's not out there right now. And I'd seen like a clip on TV of him kind of staying down after the play. So kind of unclear what that was, but obviously he's fine now. And that's huge because, and he might have, I mean, I don't know if you get into this, but might have been the best offensive lineman they've had so far this season.
I would agree. I mean, Wilson probably had a had an argument before he got hurt, but Boley's so consistent. I think PFF's got him as the sixth highest graded tackle in the ACC, and that's it's a good league, right? With Mayorga down at Miami, the Duke kid Parker. It's a very good offensive tackle position in the ACC, and Boley has played well. I think he graded out really well. I can't remember if it was the Stanford game or the Florida State game where he just had, a superb grade.
All right, let's get into speaking of grades. Let's get into our UVA midseason grades. You're a little more prepared for this because I know you wrote about it last week. But just kind of taking a little bit big picture look at this now. We'll start with the offense, where all things start. What grade are you giving the offense through the first half of the season?
Probably go an A minus for the offense. The only reason they get a minus is because the Louisville game was not exactly pretty offensively. But other than that, it's been a fantastic start for the Virginia offense. Starting with quarterback Chandler Morris, who's come in from North Texas and really handled the position well. You can tell he knows where he wants to go with the football. Nothing's predetermined, though, right? He's not before a snap, making that choice. He's looking at his reads, looking at his keys, making the decision, going through his progression and finding the open receiver. And the way he's distributed the ball makes it very, very difficult for opposing defenses to pick which wide receiver they want to cover or double cover. Trell Harris has had a big game, right? The three touchdown game against Stanford. Cam Ross has had his touchdowns. Jamal Edgerton's been a good possession receiver. The tight ends have been involved. Sage Ennis has three touchdown catches. So the ball's getting distributed. And with what the offensive line has done, paired with Jamari Taylor, my goodness, it's hard to think he was a walk-on at an FCS program.
Seriously.
He's been a star. And I know I was talking to some NFL scouts in the press box at Louisville. And they were telling me, like, everywhere they've been, that where somebody has a connection to Virginia, they're telling them, "Have you seen the Taylor kid?" Because he's been that good. And I think that says a lot about the quality of player he is and the quality of player Virginia got. So A minus for the offense. Des Kitchings has done a really good job. Tony Elliott too, of course. Offense looks good.
I'll go just a little step higher, given the full A, only because of what they've had to fight through on the offensive line that we just talked about. Like they have not been healthy on the offensive line pretty much the entire season, and still somehow they are, they're not letting up sacks. They're not, last year, this is a team that let up more than 40 sacks last season. Like it was a really shaky group, and now, they're a really good rushing offense. They're a really good passing offense. They're well balanced. The Louisville game, and I don't know if this is kind of how you took it, but like they had one possession in the first quarter, and like it, offensively, that's something where you need to get a rhythm. And because they only had the one possession, now part of that's because the defense is scoring touchdowns, and so you don't get the ball when that happens.
Louisville's good too,
They're,
defensively.
yes,
I think
very
they're a
good.
good team also.
It just looked like they were, weren't able to get that early rhythm like they've gotten in pretty much every other game this season. So, You got to win ugly sometimes, so I'll give them a pass. They made the plays when they needed to make the plays, but I'll give them an A through the first part of this. Jamari Taylor, like you mentioned before, I saw on PFF that he's Virginia's highest rated NFL draft prospect right at this point, and
Doesn't
that
surprise me.
not surprising whatsoever. I mean, the guy is he runs hard, he gets those first downs, and we mentioned Grady Rosterhouse being out, so you don't have the short yardage thing. So I mean, they found something with this direct snap here, like. I don't think you need the Grady bunch. It gives you some variety, but just give the ball to Jamari Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor was telling me with the direct snap after the Louisville game. I was asking him, why it works, and he said, even though Virginia's run it a couple times this year and he scored a couple of touchdowns on it, defenses still are very, very confused when he lines up as the quarterback. He goes, they're all out of sync. They're pointing to try to figure out where he's going. They're very confused when they see him as the quarterback. So there's some elements there, and they pile in offensive linemen in that package, it feels like, right? There's always an extra O lineman or two in that set, or an extra, and definitely an extra tight end or two. So it's tough to prepare for. It's interesting. I know Tony Elliott, doesn't want me asking about it, but
He called you out on
yeah, he
that.
called. Yeah, well, it was interesting too because I noticed it also. He said he saw it more in as he was watching college football this past weekend with UVA on the bye. I saw it too in some games, and I'm thinking, oh man, there's some copycat going on.
It's tough too because when you line up at quarterback, like you can't tell which gap they're going to run through because
Right.
you're in the middle of the offensive line, so you could go either way. But all right, let's go. I guess we kind of talked about it, but midseason MVP at this point, it would be Jamari Taylor for me just because that identity. I mean, you could go Chandler Morris too. You really can't go
It's
wrong
one of
with
those
either of them.
two.
You can't go
Yeah.
wrong with either of those guys. I think Morris, like you said before, he has just brought such a calming demeanor to this team. Even when he's not having a good game, like in Louisville, you felt like, especially in overtime, all right, they're fine. Like they'll get the plays, they'll move down the field. I mean, I can't tell you how many 2-minute offenses, like I'm just like, they're gonna score. I don't know how they're gonna do it. They're probably going to find a way to score because Chandler Morris just has a knack for those 2-minute offenses right now.
Yeah, and he's just the way he distributes the football to me is how many quarterbacks have you seen, covering college football that just key in on one receiver or two receivers or the offense, or maybe the offense is designed that way. Virginia doesn't have to design their offense that way because Morris is comfortable wading through his progressions to find the most open guy. And that to me has been so impressive to watch. Like he told me that before the year. That's what he likes to do if he can. A lot of quarterbacks say it. Not everybody does it. And he's been able to do it, which has been really impressive. I think, and like you said, his experiences from Oklahoma to TCU to North Texas, long time in college football, son of a college football, former college football coach. It makes a difference, right? You're seeing just the level of understanding at that position and what else he has to understand around him, what the receivers and the O-line and running backs are responsible for. He understands it. He grasps it, and that's a credit to him. But it'd be a very tough pick between Morris and Taylor for me. Taylor's been great. Morris is without Morris, I don't know if everything looks the same.
That's true. I think before the season we all had Chandler Morris as like our preseason MVP on offense, and I think at this point you got to give Taylor a little bit of a nod. So we'll give him co midseason MVPs. I know that's the award they're all going after right now. Defensive midseason grades. What'd you give the defense?
Defense, probably. I did position by position. So, if you take
What's it average out to?
the cumulative effect is probably like a B minus.
That's what I have, a B minus. Yeah.
B minus. It's gotten better, right? I think it has gotten better as the
For
season
sure.
has gone on. There's been some standout individuals on that unit. Like, I think Mitchell Melton has started to really get going. Same with Daniel Rickert on the other side of the defensive line. Those two guys. Rickert was saying it's almost a race to the quarterback now with him and Melton. That's the plan. They're always trying to get there. And Prevard in the FSU game was terrific. Jason Prevard. So to me, they've had some standout individual Cam Robinson, right?
What
Three
can you
games
say?
he's only played 3 games. He's second on the team in tackles. He's got a defensive
Right?
touchdown, a sack. The guy is everywhere. I wonder, if some of the flaws they showed in the first 3 games of the year, at least some of them would have been covered up by Robinson's athleticism.
Sure.
So I still think they're figuring things out in the secondary. But Robinson has helped both against the run and the pass since his return.
Yeah, you just got to keep him healthy. I mean, because
Yeah.
it's
Oh.
such a night and day difference when he's out there on the field. Not just with like the plays the linebackers should make, it's the plays that he can make in addition to that that really makes the difference. I mean, there's a couple plays in the Florida State game where he's containing Castellanos. There's,
Yeah.
some plays in the Louisville game that, he's getting to that you just don't think anyone else is going to get there. That's kind of what he adds to this defense right now. Yeah, I think B minus is right. And obviously the big thing that this team's going to have to look at as we go on is the secondary and just, what improvements can happen there. Early on in the year was a lot of communication issues between the safeties and the corners, especially on some of these deep routes. And I talked to Donovan Platt because he's drawn some of these matchups in recent games against Chris Bell from Louisville and Deuce Robinson from Florida State, who had massive nights against Virginia. Like,
Yeah.
what do you learn from those types of matchups going forward? And he said it's a lot of learning on the job as you kind of go up against some of these guys that both those guys are going to play in the NFL. Like they're good receivers. I don't
Yeah.
know if there's a receiver left on Virginia's schedule quite like those two guys, off the top of my head. There's some good ones, but not quite that
Probably not,
physicality
no.
and athleticism combo that those two guys have. But yeah,
The
that's the
second.
biggest.
As I say, the secondary will be tested at Cal, though. I mean,
Yes.
with
Yeah.
Sagapolitelli,
Oh,
the
good. You got your
freshman quarterback.
pronunciation ready.
I try, but they're going to sling the ball or try to sling the ball around, I'm sure, right? He's done it pretty well through the early going of his career at Cal, and I'm sure Virginia will be tested that night. But they probably don't have a receiver as
Duke
good
as
as
well.
Bell or Robinson. Yeah,
Duke
Duke
as
too.
well. That Darian Mensah passing attack, and they've got
You're
some
right.
maybe some quicker, more different style of receivers, but they got some good ones there as well. Some
Yeah.
guys that can kind of break the game open. But B minus sounds good. Midseason MVP, is it crazy to give it to Cam Robinson just because of the night and day difference he's made in 3 games?
100% would give it to Robinson. I think he keeps getting better too. I mean,
Yeah.
that catch on the interception, I mean, he looked like a center fielder coming in on a line on a sinking line drive, catching it at his shoestrings. I mean, it was an impressive play for Robinson. And then to have second interception return for a touchdown at Louisville,
Yeah.
and as many trips and as many trips to LNN Federal Credit Union Stadium
It's not the
for
same.
Robinson. What's that?
It's not the same, the
No, it was a lot easier the previous
name. Yeah.
Papa John, I think Robinson. I mean, just he they're just trying to get him. To really understand all the different intricacies of the defense, but he's got such great athleticism that he makes up for everything else and some of the mistakes Virginia, so other guys make on defense.
Yeah, second on the team in tackles, like you mentioned before, in 3 games. It's wild stuff. All right, special teams, what grade would you give this? I'm gonna go with like a B plus. Bettridge has missed a couple kicks this year. We've had the injury with Daniel Sparks, and Eli Slybeck actually performed well in his stead. Haven't really had like a big Cam Ross play on special teams since the first game. So looking to see if maybe that pops up again in the second half of the season. What would you go for special teams?
Yeah, I'd probably give it a B. B is will be minus as well. I
Yeah.
mean, it's been fine. Like there hasn't been the one great thing about it. There hasn't been the oh God, it's terrible play, right? There,
Yeah.
and then Virginia's had that in the past. They improved last year under the special teams coordinator Keith Gaither. They really did some nice things last year to improve their coverage units. But this year they still haven't had the terrible mistake. Colin Lacey got close, and And if it weren't for Jack Whitmer's horse collar tackle, you might have been saying, "Oh no," on that one. But they haven't had that the big, long return allowed. They haven't had the block punt allowed, or the blocked field goal allowed. They've had some missed kicks. I think that's got to get cleaned up. And I think you got to understand at this point that if it's 40 yards plus, you're really taking a chance with Bettridge. He's great inside 40. From beyond, it's not a given,
No.
right? And I think it'll be good for them to get sparks back in a punting game. But yeah, it's just kind of been okay. It's been fine. No bad mistakes. Some strong performances and highlight reel plays early. But nothing since.
Yeah, I mean that first game you had a couple special teams plays
Block
and
punt.
yeah,
Yeah.
block punt. So we'll see how that kind of progresses from here. Coaching Tony Elliott obviously entered the season with a lot of pressure to kind of get some results, and through, 6 games, he's tied the most wins he's had in the season at UVA to this point, and he's done it in half a season. So, I don't know if you can give much less than an A minus. I'll go an A though.
Yeah, he and to take and mold a team with what, 54 new players, 32 transfers, and put it together, and for it to look like these guys have been playing football together for a while, that's a huge credit to Tony and his staff, because they look in sync, and they've looked in sync on offense from the get-go. It's taken the defense some time, but
Yeah.
They've gotten guys to buy into what they want to do, his vision for the program, and to have that skill, that shows something. So I think he's done an excellent job this season.
Did you go with a grade?
Oh, an A.
An A. Okay. Just want to make
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, no, I
I
think.
was agreeing with you. Yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, I just think everything that they've kind of put together this t season, and you could throw a little bit of Des Kitchings and what he's done this season into this grade as well. And I know
F.
Red's, yeah.
F, man, he pieced
Hef,
it together.
yeah. No, they said we weren't talking about him enough, and so definitely talked about Terry Heffernan a couple of weeks ago, because what he's done with that offensive line, like there's some really good coaching jobs on this staff right now, with just with how players are playing this season, how they brought that team together from, being so many different parts, but it seems really, together. Like that's, for lack of a better word, it just seems like they've meshed really well, better than some other teams that we've seen in past years, with Tony Elliott, that have not had as many transfers or as many new additions on the field.
For sure. And when you mention the coaching in this era in college football, you also got to mention the front office,
Yeah.
right? I didn't know if you were going there, but they deserve an A too. Tyler Jones, Justin Sparrows and company in Virginia's front office, Scott Pioli, you could throw him in there too. To me, Virginia had a big budget recruiting wise for the first time, in this era. And they've spent the money well, right? Morris, Taylor, the offensive lineman, Wilson, and the defensive players like Melton and Rickard and Kamak and even Maddox Marcellus and guys like that, Platt in the secondary, Devin Neal. To see so many of the transfers pan out, because you don't know. I mean, you think you have an
Yeah.
idea. Their philosophy was proven, experienced players, and it seems like that idea, that attack, and old guys, right? Virginia is one of the oldest teams in college football. It seems like that plan has paid off.
Yeah, and you talk about, I'm glad you bring it to the front office now, because it's not just bringing a lot of guys in, and it's not just, oh, go get the big names out there. It's finding the right guys and the right fit, because heck, there are plenty of teams ahead of Virginia that got more players and had higher ratings. North Carolina, you look at that. And there's a lot of talk about how they did not target the right players, and they did not go for the guys that are at the right level. West Virginia brought in a ton of players, and that's, getting a little slower start for them. There's a lot of Arkansas. They've already fired their coach and they're on to their interim coach now. Virginia Tech brought in 30 commits this offseason. Kentucky and Florida State, brought in a lot of highly rated guys, and they played well for the first part of the season. Now they've dropped, three games in the ACC play. So it's not just bring in the best guys, have the best transfer portal rankings. I know everyone wanted to talk about, consensus top 25 transfer portal class, but it's a lot more finding the right fits in this day and age. And that's what the front office does, identifying those guys.
And prioritizing the positions you need to be deep and sturdy, and making them deep and sturdy. Offensive line, defensive line, quarterback, right? They what, eight, seven off, seven transfer offensive linemen, if I'm remembering off the top of my head correctly, six transfer defensive linemen. And you look at those deep, you look at, just look at the interior defensive linemen, right? They brought in Hunter Osborne from Alabama and Jacob Holmes from Fresno State to add to a group that was already deep enough, right? Hammond, Britton, Jameer Carter. Now you've got five you're playing, and Hunter Osborne is a really good player. And he's coming off the bench. It's like the fourth, maybe fifth guy. And he can give you quality reps. On the O-line, they've had all these injuries, but they've withstood because they've been able to plug and play with some different guys, whether it's Wigginton or Sipe, who they brought in a year before. I think they've done a good job recognizing, they saw some playoff teams last year. They played Notre Dame, Clemson, SMU, excuse me, and they probably looked at the other side of the line of scrimmage and said, "Man, these guys are loaded on the offensive and defensive lines." Tony Elliott has talked about it for years, how at Clemson they used to roll defensive linemen and had wished Virginia could do the same thing. When Virginia got the money, front office went out and prioritized those positions of absolute need.
It's funny. I think back to conversation had with Lo Davis at Cav Futures. Just they're sitting in the press box last year watching Virginia Tech come out of the tunnel, and they're like, man, they got some dudes. Like, we need some dudes. And they went out and they got some dudes. Like, they are solid right now. A lot of people made fun of, oh, they're bringing in so many offensive linemen, they're bringing in so many defensive backs,
You need them.
all needed because of the injuries. They come for everyone. Every team's going to deal with injuries. And so it's a really good job done by this front office. All right, jumping in lastly here to a Washington State preview this week. It's a new team coming to Charlottesville. Not only with everything that's changed with them after Jake Dickert left for Wake Forest, and now they have Jimmy Rogers as head coach there. But it's also, Virginia has not played Washington State before in football. What is one thing, though, that jumped out on tape watching Washington State scare the crap out of number four Ole Miss last week, 24-21 on the road?
Yeah, man, I was watching a game and I'm thinking, holy cow, is this Washington State team better than you think? Has Ole Miss played down? It's probably a combination of both. Their move, their quarterback change. I think Tony Elliott even mentioned it. Their quarterback change has given them some new life. Eckhouse is the quarterback. I think it's Zevi Eckhouse.
Zevi, yep.
Zevi, I didn't want to butcher the first name. I know the last name's Eckhouse. Throws the ball, can run it a little bit. I think he's given them some life. They've got some receivers who can absolutely play, and they've got a defensive end who's getting after the quarterback too. Two sacks against Ole Miss, had a sack against Washington. So
Isaac Terrell.
Isaac Terrell. Yes, I should have mentioned his name. But I think it's very tough, I'm sure, for Washington State to get players the way it used to, right? And Jimmy Rogers had come in from South Dakota State program at the FCS level. And there's some South Dakota State transfers on the roster. So I'm sure he's instilling, what it took to win at South Dakota State. It's an FCS national championship winning program, won an FCS national title there. I'm sure some of those same principles are in place. So they're going to be tough. They're going to be physical, but they also have vulnerabilities, right? Let's call it what it is. They gave up 59 points to Chandler Morris's former school in North Texas. So I'm sure Virginia's thinking that there are ways to exploit this Washington State team. And coming off the bye, Tony Elliott is 4-0 off bye weeks as a head coach at UVA. Coming off a bye week, Virginia probably should feel like it can win this game.
It's interesting too for Washington State because of their situation conference-wise right now. Like all this travel that they're having to make. They were just in Mississippi last week. The equipment truck stayed out on the East Coast, but the team has to fly back to Washington and Pullman and then fly back out to Virginia. That's a lot on a team.
This is only their first trip to the Commonwealth this year. They will make
Yeah.
another. They play at James Madison in November.
It
They are
so much
the
travel.
they are the traveling, you know, they're doing what they have to though.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make it work. It's just a tough situation. You feel bad because, you know, you kind of remember at times when Washington State's been good, right? Most recently it was when Mike Leach was there. As the coach, and they're playing in the Pac, you know, in the former Pac-12. They're still in the league, right? By name,
Yeah.
if you want
Whatever
to
it
call
is.
it that. What's that?
Whatever it is.
Yeah, it's them in Oregon State, but you feel bad because it's with conference realignment, you know, those were two teams that just got left behind. So it'll be interesting to see them in person. This is a start of a home and home, right? Virginia goes there to Pullman in a couple of years. Fascinating. It's a fascinating, fascinating game.
Yeah. Let's get to the rat poison portion of the podcast here. UVA one win away from becoming bowl eligible for the first time since 2021. Obviously, they haven't played in a bowl game since 2019. Seem like players are well aware of that fact, but you try to pull a little bit out of them, and I just don't get the sense that they really care. I this team and I and that's not, entirely, but they care about doing this for the fans and getting this fan base and this program back to a bowl eligible. But, this is a program that I think more than any other team I've covered, they flush things so quickly. Like they are on to the next thing. They are a pretty determined bunch to that they have bigger goals than just getting 6 wins this year.
I'm sure, like having players who'd been at Ohio State, Mitchell Melton won a national title last year. George, excuse me, yeah, Donovan Platt, who was an Army, who had a great season. And you have guys who have been Jaden Thomas from Notre Dame, who played in the national championship last year. You have guys who've been in winning programs. Chandler Morris was at TCU, and they played in the national title game. You guys who have seen what it takes to get there. They're not going to those older players who those experienced guys who've been elsewhere, you know, are kind of assume bowl eligibility is a given when you're a major, you know, power conference football
Sure.
team. Now, where I disagree a little bit, I think it matters to them for their teammates who've been at Virginia,
Yeah,
right? It
that's fair.
matters to them to check that box for the guys like Jameer Carter and Noah Josie and Mikhail Boley, who have been at UVA and have been, you know, have experienced a coaching change from Bronco Mendenhall to Tony Elliott, been through some tough seasons, you know, lived through the tragedy at Virginia in 2022. Like there are a lot of players who understand what bowl eligibility means for the veteran Cavaliers, right?
Yeah.
Those guys who've been around, been in the program because it's been a goal. It hasn't been attained yet for them. So I think it matters to those guys and to the players who are new and understand what they walked into at UVA.
Yeah, what it means to this for this program that, since Tony Elliott arrived has not been able to cross over
Right.
that goal so far. All right. 17.5 point favorites. That's a big line for Virginia at home. Prediction time. What do you see this weekend in Charlottesville?
I think UVA wins in a blowout. I think
Yeah.
they'll cover Tony Elliott off the bye. Washington State coming east again. A lot of different things at play. And Virginia on offense, I think they'll be looking for a bounce back too after a little if they're not the cleanest game at Louisville, right?
Sure.
Good at times, but not the cleanest. So I do think Virginia will win in blowout fashion, get some of the offensive things corrected.
Yeah, I'll go the same route there. They get that sixth win. I'm gonna go like 40 to 21, something like that. I think they might just barely cover that 17 and a half. That's a lot of points. But all right, that should do it for us, Greg. I know you will be there in Scott Stadium on Saturday covering the Cavaliers as always. I unfortunately am missing this one, but I will have the post-game report just after the game as well from my undisclosed location.
Oh boy.
Maybe I'll reveal that when I'm when I get hop on there after the game on Saturday. But Greg, thanks for joining us. We're gonna toss it over now. I caught up with UVA shortstop Eric Becker, just talk a little bit about fall baseball and his story, and just how Chris Pollard's first fall there is going in Charlottesville. So that's coming up next. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. We are taking a little trip over to the dish for some fall baseball now. I am joined today by all ACC shortstop, USA Collegiate National Team member this summer. I got Eric Becker, shortstop for the Cavaliers, coming on here. Eric, it's the fall. It's got some baseball going on, got some scrimmages. How is it going, man?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously an adjustment for everyone. But we're all having a good time. We're meshing really well, and I think everyone's having a lot of fun. So we've been off to a good start.
I was gonna say, just to start off, what's the vibe like around fall practice when you're getting to know so many new faces? You're adjusting to a new coaching staff. Everyone's kind of trying to get to know each other. Baseball gets, a whole school year almost to learn each other before you actually have to start playing games in the spring. How is that process going?
Yeah, it's been definitely interesting to see. I think, one of our coaches said it best. It's pretty cliche, but everyone chose to be here. It was a unique situation with the coaches leaving and Coach Pollard and the whole coaching staff coming over here. But everyone on the team that's on it now chose to come back or to transfer over here. So everyone's having a lot of fun, they're having a good time, and we're still getting to know each other a little bit. Still a little weird, to be honest, but it's different, and I'm excited for the challenge and for the spring to come.
I'm sure you can pick up on it a little bit as you kind of go through some fall practices and whatnot and workouts. What are the differences, I guess, adjusting to and learning, Coach Pollard's, coaching style versus kind of what you were used to when you got there with Coach O'Connor?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's really, a big difference. If I remember correctly, I think, Coach O'Connor and Coach Pollard are pretty good friends, and they were when, they coached against each other for a while. So, I know Coach Pollard is a huge fan of Coach O'Connor, but just the way that the coaching staff now goes about everything, it's been a joy to be a part of. And they really cherish making connections with us, and that helps. And I went to a foundation dinner, and they told me to say an adjective about the team, and my word was resilience. Just because, again, it was a super weird situation that the coaches were put in, and again, they chose to be here, and they really made it a priority to make connections with all of us, and while upholding the strong culture that Coach O'Connor, Coach Matt, Coach Kirby, all those guys helped develop here for the last 20 or so years. So it's been definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, going off that, I was actually talking with someone today about just that night, lose to Boston College in the ACC tournament. You find out your NCAA tournament fade a few days later, and then, a few days later after that, Brian O'Connor is out the door. He's heading to Mississippi State. The emotions I imagine were a lot to take in, just from, bowing out of the ACC tournament to missing the NCAA tournament to seeing Coach O'Connor leave. What was that week like for you, but just the team as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very tough week. As you could imagine, we all felt like we deserved to, play in the tournament. But again, we had no control over that. So there was nothing we could do. And then the decision, it was a tough decision, and for all of us. And again, everyone, we had our group chat, and there were rumors going around. We didn't know if they were going to be true or not. But again, there's nothing. I have no control over that, and I kind of just wanted to get the summer going and get back on the field. So I was pretty excited to go play. But again, yeah, I mean, I had really no control, and respect. I have nothing but respect for all those guys that went over, to Mississippi State. Still in contact with a bunch of them. So wish them nothing but the best.
I and as natural, after something like that happens, I know you took a look at your options. What was that experience like? I'm sure it's not something that you anticipated having to do when you got to college.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that I chose UVA was, kind of the coaching stability, and they were a coaching staff who's been together for a while, and obviously they coach kids the right way. But that was, that went into my decision process when I was being recruited out of high school. But I mean, it was a pretty hectic few weeks in the beginning of the summer. Me, I'm kind of not really an attention seeker. I don't really like attention. So it was a pretty tough week, to be honest. Tough few weeks. But again, kind of playing summer ball, that really helped me get my mind off of everything and kind of let me, sit back and enjoy, the Cape. I mean, everyone talks about the Cape, so I had a lot of fun up there.
Did you talk to a bunch of different teams? Did you let maybe your dad handle that, someone else? Like, how did you approach that situation?
Yeah, I kind of just, let my advisors kind of take care of it. Again, I didn't want to, again, I was up in the Cape, so I didn't want to really, focus on, talking to coaches, kind of stuff like that. So I just wanted to really focus on baseball and kind of, have my head, being in the right spot, for baseball. So I let my coaches handle it, kind of talk to some guys, but I mean, I'm super happy with the decision I made, and I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, let's talk about Coach Pollard because obviously you guys had a previous relationship. I know your dad, Jeff, obviously he played at Duke. So you got a little bit of an alumni relationship there. But also, I know Chris Pollard and, staff, they kind of recruited you a little bit and your brother, Nicky. What was that relationship like? What was that reaction like when Chris Pollard gets the job there at UVA?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously my dad went to Duke, so that was my dream school growing up. I mean, I always watched the Duke basketball games, and I went to Duke to watch a few baseball games when I was younger. But yeah, so I knew Coach Pollard, obviously from being recruited at a high school, and there was a relationship there for sure. He recruited Nikki. So I mean, that kind of made it a little easier. Talking to him, there was kind of already a little relationship there. And then him just introducing me to all the coaches, Coach Simmons, Coach Tyler. So that made that transition, I guess, or those relationships kind of spark a little bit sooner than you would have expected. But again, those guys have been great to me so far, and have done a really, really good job of, helping this team mesh and teaching us a lot of stuff. So again, I'm super excited for the spring.
Last thing on this is it. What was like the final thing that like made you say, "Yeah, I want to stay at in Charlottesville. I want to play at the Dish." What was that like final thing that kind of put you over the edge?
Yeah, so again, it was really, really, it was tough for me. Because again, I hate being in like situations like that. But it's something that I got to get used to. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more situations like that. My parents always say that was like the first real like man decision that I had to make in my life. So, but what it really came down to is, I mean, I love this school. Obviously, the academics are great. The area's amazing. But again, I know the ACC. I've played in here for 2 years, and again, I've heard nothing but good things about those coaches. They've been amazing, and everyone I talked to, spoke very highly about them. So I thought that was the right decision for me, and it certainly has been.
I know you want to talk about the baseball. So let's talk about, this summer you get a great opportunity. Obviously, you talked about playing at the Cape, but you also get to play with the USA Collegiate National Team. And you get to play with, one of your current or a couple of your current teammates, actually, with AJ Garcia, who made the team with you, but then Kyle Johnson was in training camp. What was that experience like? I'm sure that's something as a kid that, I'm a lot of baseball players grow up wanting to have that experience.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an honor to, wear those letters and stripes across your chest. It was, I would say, the coolest experience, baseball wise that I've had in my life. Going over to Japan, obviously, it wasn't the result that we wanted, but it was such a cool experience, getting to play with AJ and a bunch of other great players, getting to learn from them, getting to learn from the coaches. Playing, the Japanese team, it was definitely, a different experience. And, playing those guys, you really realize, how hard they work and how, fundamental they are. It's like, all right, wow, those guys play the game the right way. So, it was definitely, again, a cool experience, and I wouldn't trade it in for the world. Especially playing with AJ. I had committed already, so it was cool. We spent a lot of time down there together. Got pretty close, hit the ground running.
Did you know him at all beforehand?
Yeah, so I mean, he's a Jersey guy, so I kind of grew up playing against him in travel ball a little bit. So I knew him before, and then, last summer, we got to play and carry together. So it's kind of been like, we've always known each other, but we got pretty close last summer. He came up here. They played us. Duke played us here. So we went out to eat. Me, Kyle, AJ, and then Henry. We all went out to eat, had a good time. And then now, I played with him this past summer. Him and Kyle, gotten pretty close with them, and we're all obviously having a great time here right now.
Describe AJ as a player for those, a lot of Virginia fans, didn't watch a ton of Duke baseball last year, but what kind of player is AJ Gracia?
Yeah, he is. I'd say he's a pretty elite hitter. When it comes to hitting, there's not much better than him at, knowing the zone and, picking out the pitches that he wants. And then obviously when he swings, he does a lot of damage. So I'm sure, the fans that'll be here in the spring, they should expect a lot of fun, loud, hits, coming from him. And then obviously in the field. He's a super talented center fielder. Gets great reads out there. And then, just as a leader, he's been a little injured, in the fall so far. But I mean, he just came back, and again, you can tell all the guys maybe are a little bit happier that he's in the dugout, and he's back joking around with everyone. So, super goofy guy, always has a positive attitude coming to the field. So, just a great guy to be around, great teammate so far.
Looking at yourself, what did you go into the summer hoping to improve on last season? You led the team with a 368 batting average, team high 52 RBIs last year, 9 home runs. It was a step forward for you. You got all ACC honors, but what did you kind of go into the summer being like, all right, I need to come back better in this department?
Yeah, I mean, hitting wise, I feel like you can always get better at hitting. So again, just getting reps, facing, good pitching, and then, going over to Japan, a lot of those pitches, I hadn't even seen before. So getting to face those guys was definitely super humbling, and it was fun, honestly. I mean, you can talk to AJ about it. Some of those pitches that we saw were just super nasty, and we'd walk back to the dugout and like, what was that? So that was a, again, a super fun experience. And then, defensively, just, really as a whole, getting more reps and, getting my feet moving. After the summer, after I finished up with baseball, I got to work with my dad, kind of just, going to the field, getting reps, getting my feet moving, which will ultimately put me in a better position to throw. So, again, just going out there trying to, better all facets of my game.
What's that time like with your dad when you get to go out there and just kind of work one-on-one together?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a coach, my coach, since I could remember. So even now, he'll see something with my swing, and He'll call me, FaceTime me. So it's definitely, maybe a little annoying sometimes. But I couldn't be more grateful for him and everything he's taught me, and even my brother. So it's good having Nikki around, competition, 24/7. So, it's been fun.
What was draft night? Were y'all, I think you were overseas, right? Or had you come home yet?
Yeah, so I had to wake up. We were in Japan still. I had to wake up at like 7 a.m. to watch the draft. I had heard some rumblings about where he would go, so I just wanted to make sure that I was up for that. It was definitely a super cool experience. We were actually in a meeting when he got drafted, so I couldn't watch it live. Couldn't watch it. So I think he got drafted around like 9. I guess it would be 9 p.m. here, but it was around 9 a.m. there. We were in a meeting, so I had to rewind it, watch it, and then I got to text him. So definitely super, super happy, big brother. And he's in Arizona right now doing a little camp, so I think he's having a good time over there.
Yeah, your brother Nicky Becker getting drafted by the Seattle Mariners. Obviously he was committed to UVA. Did you ever think that y'all would play together at the college level?
Yeah, I mean, when he was in high school, it never really crossed my mind. Again, like I thought he would have wanted to do again his own thing. But I mean, he came on a visit. We had a lot of fun here. And then they offered him, and he kind of committed on the spot, which was super cool. And it was like, all right, like my parents were super happy. They wouldn't have to travel all over, because they had it rough with travel ball. My dad would be with me somewhere, and my mom would be, in Georgia with Nikki. So, summers were really tough for them. So it was kind of a breath of fresh air, that we'd be playing together. But again, the draft happened, and super happy for him. He's doing great things.
Looking at now this team this year, you talked about kind of growing and getting to know each other and everything. How would you describe this team if there's, one spot that, you could really highlight? How would you describe this year's team in Charlottesville?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty young, actually. So I feel like you fans could expect a lot of, electricity. We're super fiery. I think we're gonna have a really good offensive team. And then, on the pitching side, we had just, scrimmaged Georgetown, and our pitchers were unbelievable. They've been great in the scrimmages. So, I think fans could expect a lot of great things in the spring. It's gonna be a fun year.
Yeah, I was at that Georgetown scrimmage. I guess it was 13 innings by the end of it. One run scored by y'all, only two runs scored by Georgetown. So the pitching, like you said, was great.
Yeah.
What did
Oh, yeah.
Coach Pollard, what was his message, I guess, just to the hitters? I know it was a lot of young guys getting some reps out there. What was his message after that?
Yeah, he was just like, I mean, he says it best. Mistakes, he wants mistakes being made in the fall, right? This is the time of year to make mistakes, and to learn, to try new things. And for a lot of the guys on the team, it was their first time playing in front of a, in a stadium like that, in a crowd. With a crowd like that. And so I'm sure there were a lot of nerves. And I remember my first scrimmage at the dish, playing East Carolina. I was, super nervous. I still get nervous. But again, it's just, growing pains, right? You'll go out there, and again, it's the first scrimmage, and you're gonna play a little nervous. So that was his message. I mean, he said not to stress too hard. We're gonna hit. So nothing to worry. But I mean, he focused on the positive, and obviously the pitching staff did a real good job.
Yeah, let's talk about the pitchers. I mean, you said you got to spend some time with Kyle Johnson down in Cary with the Team USA training camp. From my experience watching him pitch on the mound, I think it was only three innings, but it kind of seemed like he was carrying over some of the momentum he built for himself last postseason.
Oh yeah, I mean, he is a completely different person when he's on the mound. I mean, off the field, he's again super goofy, like happy, and then he's on the mound and he's all business. So I mean, watching him pitch this fall has been pretty fun to watch. I mean, he's got some good stuff, and he really works hard. So I'm expecting a lot of big things from him, and seeing the way that he's held himself, and how he carries himself, you know, has again has been pretty fun to watch and see the way he goes about his business here. I kind of learn a little bit from him and what he does.
This lineup looks like it has a ton of potential between the guys that came up from Duke, guys like AJ and Kyle and Sam Harris and Zach Jackson, guys like that. Noah Murray, I'm gonna miss names. Some of the guys that stayed from UVA, like yourself, Diddy's back. You've got some freshmen coming in. You've got Joe Tirole coming in. What do you just make of this, this lineup overall?
Yeah, I mean we should score a lot of runs. I mean, looking at it on paper, it's going to be a pretty good lineup. But again, like I mean, you saw it last year. We had a really good lineup on paper and it just wasn't the year that we wanted. So just now, I mean, we're going about our business and trying not to ride the highs, ride the lows, like just stay even keel, trying to learn as much as we can. And ET, our hitting coach, has been doing a great job of coaching us and making sure that we don't ride the lows and that we stay super positive. So that's kind of our main focus right now in the fall.
I was going to ask about Eric because Eric Tyler, the hitting coach there, UVA now, came over with Coach Pollard from Duke. He comes in with a tremendous reputation. What has it been like working with him? And I know in talking to Coach Pollard, it's so much of this fall is about development because there is so much potential in this lineup and kind of how do you build to unlock that potential? How does Eric, how do you think he gets the best out of you guys?
Yeah, I mean, again, it just starts with, building a connection with him. I mean, he's super close with all of us. They kind of preach, to always go down to their offices and just go in there and talk. So I think it starts with that. But I mean, he you see him, we do early work and he's in there, not just with me, but everyone. I mean, he's one-on-one with everyone, asking them how they feel, what they want to work on. And again, like he asks us if we want stuff to work on. So he's always in there, trying to make us better, giving us drills, stuff like that. And he really knows what he's talking about. So, this fall he's done a really good job of getting one-on-one with everyone, having hitters meetings, one-on-one hitters meetings, which has been really helpful so far.
Looking back, I know last year missing the NCAA tournament, that was really tough on you and the other returners as well. As one of those guys, how much extra motivation is there, even in the fall, kind of carrying it on all the way through the offseason to the season to get UVA back into the NCAA tournament and, further than that, maybe even Omaha?
Yeah, I mean, if you would have told me last year that our team wouldn't have made the playoffs, I would have, called you crazy. But I mean, yeah, that taste watching the selection show, it's something that, I never want to feel again. I love playing this game and I want to play for a long time. And realizing that your season came to an end, it was definitely a tough feeling. So yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of extra motivation, in all the returners, in all the returners' mind, and then even the feeling that Duke had, all those guys, losing the Super Regional, right? I mean, there's a lot of us who've been to Omaha on this team, and all the Duke guys, lost in Game 3 of the Super Regional. So I mean, there's a lot of motivation going around on this team, and hopefully it's for the better.
I was going to ask, can y'all feel that? Because, Coach Pollard had never made it to Omaha when he was at Duke. That was something that was, they're on the precipice many times, including against UVA a couple years ago. They could never quite get over that hump, though. Can you feel that from not only the coaching staff, but, some of those other guys that came over from Duke?
Yeah, I mean we kind of talk about it in the locker room, right? Everyone talks about how much they want to go to Omaha and again, like all of us are super motivated. That's the goal, right? Is to make it to Omaha. 1186. We're keeping that. So yeah, I mean Coach Pollard has had a pretty rough record, I guess, in Super Regionals with last year and UVA a few years ago. But again, I mean we all have the same goal, so hopefully we can achieve it.
Awesome, man. That is Eric Becker, shortstop for UVA. Eric, appreciate you coming on here. And y'all got another scrimmage coming up against Navy, and then we'll kind of get towards the spring a little bit. When we see we haven't seen the schedule yet, but I'm sure it's going to be a great spring out there for you, man. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. Had a blast.
Awesome. All right. Subscribe to the Who's On podcast on YouTube, our new YouTube channel. You can also comment, like, and we'll be sure to respond to you there. Follow and leave a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. We will see you later next week.